Good morning. I thank first the Schiller Institute and the organizers of this conference for having invited me. I thank Mr. LaRouche and Madame and Mrs. LaRouche and Mr. Cheminade. I will start all the way. I think the program is full, I said this morning. I want to talk to you about Syria. And the title of my intervention is In Syria and Elsewhere Against the War Party and the Law of the Jungle. We have to rebuild peace in respect of international law. These are my themes. First of all, the world today is in great danger of war more than ever before. It's going through a global crisis that has been said already. One hears much about a new Cold War, which would lead us back to the old confrontation between the free world, so-called the Axis of Good, and the totalitarian bloc dubbed the Axis of Evil by George Bush. This is a confrontation which ended with the so-called victory of the United States over communism between 1989 and 1991. The disappearance of the USSR in 1991, which Putin qualifies as the greatest political catastrophe of the 20th century, provoked the rise of the famous unipolar American moment of sinister memory, a much shorter moment than expected by the Atlantic Empire, which thought it would be eternal, but much too long for the rest of the planet, including for the poorest among us. The most powerful empire the world has ever seen, more powerful than Rome, is what the indispensable and unique hyperpower was for 20 years, as it assumed the vocation of dominating the world in the name of a messianism, inspired both by the Old and the New Testaments. This alleged divine will, the whims of the new masters of the world, took the place of international law. It is upon the rubble of that legality that the American imperial order was built, around a civilized center, so-called, erecting itself as an international community, attempting to rule the planet, including a number of peripheral rogue states. They attempt to rule the whole planet over the rogue states. What I call the Elizabeth Arden Club of Diplomacy, Washington, London, Paris, and Berlin, and perhaps a couple of other capitals, has claimed during a quarter of a century that it embodies the international community, and I always put it into parentheses. It is a political directorate inspired by the War Party, whose followers make up the deep state of Western and other countries. Some speak of the military-industrial complex. Others call it the new conservative current, that bellicose imperial party. It's not a political party as such, but it's a bellicose interventionist party, bigoted from the standpoint of religion, who carries out in the name of God a systematic policy of aggression, interventionism, destruction, in one word, a criminal policy. Their aim is supposedly to impose peace, but through a war, as a democracy and human rights throughout the world, in particular in the Arab Muslim world, including especially through force. The objective it would be to impose peace to this Arab Muslim world, and especially through force, since it's the divine will of the empire to do good and repress evil. By the way, that is the same objective and the name of the religious police of the Wahhabite Saudi regime. That's what it's called. In fact, that's the name. And the NATO is the armed branch of that war party of the Atlantic Empire. The Atlantic leaders move under false flags of democracy, justice, morality, law. They demonize any country who oppose their ambitions by calling them warring states, and which should be carved up into so-called democratic entities on the basis of religious beliefs and ethnic. That concept has played an essential role in the U.S. strategy for several decades, and it is by evoking this boogeyman that they have systematically violated and destroyed international law. That law is based on the United Nations Charter, which in Article 51 attributes solely to the Security Council the right to take the adequate measures it deems necessary to maintain peace and international security. But the neocons in Washington, the Atlanticists, couldn't care less about the UN legality. For them, the foundation of law is not the UN Charter. According to Noam Chomsky, that contempt of the primacy of law is profoundly embedded in the American culture and practice. This is not me who says it, it's Noam Chomsky. The neoconservative doctrine, the zero degree of political thought, has a simple basis. The Cold War is finished, but the United States has the responsibility to protect the world from rogue states. In the 1970s, Nixon, i.e. a lot before the Cold War, the end of the Cold War, Nixon had a theory called the theory of the madman. And the idea was that it was a good thing that madmen with unpredictable behavior armed with a huge potential of destruction in order to create or to reinforce the fears of its adversaries, that this was something which was good because the first country which was submitted to this strategy is Iraq and others, many others. And the last one in the calendar, having been the Syrians since 2011. Then Sudan, Afghanistan, Somalia, Palestine, Yugoslavia, Iran, Ukraine. Robert McNamara, a former American defense secretary, told the between 1961 and 68, told the International Herald Tribune in 2000 that the United States itself had become a rogue state. Chomsky said the same in the beginning of the Arab Springs, noting that his country put itself above international law. The war party is inspired by this adage, si vis pacem, para bellum. That means, if you want peace, prepare for war. An ambiguous motto, because it raises the concept of armed peace. Yet, this is the motto of the War College in France, of the British Navy, and it means, in reality, if you want peace, go make war against others. This is the real meaning of this expression. If you want peace at home, make war against others. These are the neoconservatives, etc. Today, there is a peace camp who is opposed to this war party. But the peace camp is not in the West. It's in the other side, in the side of the BRICS and of other countries which are resisting at this point. The peace camp refers to the principles of international law, to crisis settlement through negotiations, and to the perspective of a multipolar world, as opposed to the war party, which prospers on the rubble of the UN legality, imposing chaos, the law of the jungle, and seeking every occasion to impose its views by force. It's a case in the Middle East. In the Middle East, the threats also of nuclear conflict, the coming implosion of the national system, the refugee crisis, or other dramas that afflict the planet. You never have to look too far to find the hawks ready to do everything to preserve the hegemony of the Atlantic camp, if need be, by war, and to stop the world from changing. To reconcile beautiful principles and noble values on the one hand with wars of aggression and criminal behavior on the other, the theory of chaos is a manual for which gives every answer. Aggression wars, what the Nuremberg Tribunal said about wars is that it's not only an international crime to launch a war of aggression, it is the supreme international crime, differing only from other war crimes in that it contains within itself the accumulated evil of the whole. The debate about ethics in international relations is loaded. It is a real debate for some, a smokescreen for others. The reference to legality does not have the same value for both camps. Diplomats, since I am one which is now retired, diplomats cannot work miracles, even if they are, very intelligent, if they only have indefensible policies to defend. And it's often our case. Those which are on the wrong side of history, and they cannot be constructive if they act in the service of destructive leaders determined to continue the war and to weaken diplomacy itself. Master of the Empire, the United States carries the main responsibility for those crimes, destructions, and atrocities we have mentioned. Obama boasts that he avoided the worst in August 2013 by deciding not to launch punitive strikes against Syria in the wake of the chemical weapons affair. In fact, the decision to break the rules of the game seems to have been more motivated by his desire to affirm his own power against the chiefs of staff, the secret services, and the think tanks that all are under the influence of and financed by the Saudi Arabia and the Middle Eastern countries. He said he wanted to break those, the rules of the game within the United States, but not the real situation. He wanted to affirm his power, often, I said, he wanted to break the power of people who are often in the United States influenced by Israel and the Arab. Paul Craig Roberts, as a former Undersecretary of State to the Treasury, he wrote with a vitriolic pen in the blog of resistance on the 12th of January of this year, unique among the countries in the U.S., the U.S. government is the most complete criminal organization in human history. It's not me who wrote this, but it's Paul Craig Roberts who wrote it a couple of months ago. Despite his smiles and lovely speeches, Obama has lit and kept more conflicts than George W. Bush, and he's heading a state responsible for the death of millions of children and adults, the destruction of states and of whole societies, tens of millions of lives broken, without even having to go all the way back to Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Yes, having continued to wreak havoc in the greater Middle East, he has contributed more than anyone to nuclear proliferation, especially in Europe, and to relaunching a war of aggression against Russia and China. Words of full of peace, but acts of war galore. Supported by the Zionist lobby, the Saudis and the Gulf countries, by the weapons dealers, the financial groups, and the favorite candidate of the neoconservative camp, Hillary Clinton, former Obama Secretary of State, has a long record of warmonger and extremist as one of the most dangerous people on the planet. She has played an active role in fanning the flames of all conflicts and wars for a quarter of a century now, Yugoslavia, Kosovo, Libya, Syria, not to mention Ukraine, Honduras in between. An enthusiastic proponent of regime change, she is wildly anti-Syrian, anti-Iranian, anti-Hezbollah, anti-Russian and anti-Chinese, and wildly pro-Israeli as well. Paradoxically, there are many wise people on the other side of the Atlantic who hope that Donald Trump will be elected, since his isolationism might steer Washington off the course of warlike interventionism. The vassals of the empire, Europeans, Middle Eastern, or others, are accomplices and co-responsible for all the suffering perpetrated. It is common knowledge that France and its NATO allies, with their privileged relationships to Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and Israel, have played a key role in the supreme international crime, which is wars of aggression. It is a case in Syria and as in Libya before. That support is multiple and accepted. Closing down embassies, sanctions, active support to the armed oppositions, including terrorists, activism at the UN Security Council, deployment of special forces in flagrant violation of international law, tolerance towards jihadists leaving for Syria, the current state of affairs. I'm going rapidly, but I have to say, in 2011, it was Syria's turn. It had long been targeted by the empire, both by the it's not a plot, it's a plan, by the Israelo-American plans to break it up. Especially since 2001. So Syria was declared against Syria back then. We will not go into the details. Syria has always been targeted by this dismantlement plans since many years. I cannot go through the details. Others might talk about it. Simply, the Syrian state has not collapsed, as its friends so-called expected. It pays wages and pensions to its civil servants without default. Its institutions are in place. This constitutional calendar has been respected, all things taken into account. Its national army, not the Alawite army of Bashar al-Assad, it's a national army supported by the Russians, Iranians, and Lebanese Hezbollah allies, and some Iraqi elements, has resisted an aggression of the great Western powers in alliance with the fundamentalists of the Middle East and tens of thousands of mercenaries of 100 nationalities in hundreds of groups. The state is still there. However, Syria has been destroyed two-thirds after 5 years of savage violence, during which it served hidden in the West through lies, has been experimentation testing ground for all forms of creative chaos and all the resources. The result is that a prosperous country, self-sufficient, with no important debt, with functioning public services and free education and healthcare, is totally in ruins today. Its infrastructure, schools, hospitals, social centers, roads are destroyed. To achieve that result, the aggressors claiming to be friends of Syria had to help the terrorists of the armed opposition break a good part of the country. I insist on the sanctions, as I'm not going through all of them, but the European Union, when it was still 28, to imitate the United States, started imposing sanctions, blockages, and sanctions just for the year July 2011-2012, the EU and the United States adopted 17 different sets of sanctions. The diplomatic sanctions were adopted starting August 2001 after Russia, China vetoed the draft resolution inspired of the Libyan president. It's a true martyr under these sanctions. I think that the multiform sanctions have completely fragilized the society, and there has been tolerance. But, however, Syria was not destructured. It's a politicide. It's called a politicide. It's a neologism. They want to demoralize the populations by giving them the impression that the West that the West is there to save them from the tyrant that massacres them, and that they have to receive the refugees. The diplomatic sanctions uh, The material damages are immense, 300,000 to 400,000 dead, at least 130,000 are from the regular army, more than 1 million have handicapped, several millions displaced, one Syrian out of two. Syria had 22 million population before the war. The national tissue is totally broken by these mercenaries. And now there's ethnical, like the Kurds. For only Syria, recent estimations estimate 300 trillion, 300 billion, for the destructions. Excuse me. There's some experts. Some experts are proposing that it's the West which started this war and supported it. All these countries are responsible for the real losses, and this expert from Syria and the Middle East that one could estimate the destructions to $1,000 billion, and he proposes that they take these countries to the International Criminal Court to have them pay damages. He proposes a tax on oil and gas to pay back these and to pay for the reconstruction of the country under the responsibility of the UN. I think it should be under Syria. There would be a terrible situation. 1.5 million dead in Iraq. We have to lift immediately the sanctions. If there's a message I want to give you, these sanctions have to be lifted. It's a crime of war. It's a major crime of war. This has to be lifted right away. We have to fight for this. And I think that all of those who are responsible, the actors and the accomplices, because of their silence and their, they have to pay their account. They have to be made responsible, either here on Earth or elsewhere. According to another expert who is a Canadian, who said that the Arab Springs resulted in 1.5 million dead, many millions displaced populations. It costed $833 billion to all the Arab countries, of which $300 billion for Syria, which I already said. To this we have to say, politically, look, this is not even taking into account the funds that were frozen, from Libya, $300 billion, frozen, stolen. It will never reappear again, except for this or that. Politically, the future of Syria is not yet fixed, because they're constantly relaunching the war anew and under cover of negotiations. In fact, they're setting up a NATO operation in northern Syria under different pretexts, still to get rid of Bashar. I don't think they will succeed. I think Syria will be victorious, but it's not to fight against Daesh, against ISIL. I was supposed to talk about a need to get out of the crisis. In conclusion, the area covered by this project of China, now supported by Russia, and which includes now more than 60 countries, of which the credits would be about $900 billion for the time being, and a specific project for Syria of some $30 billion dollars, and it covers the whole plan of George Bush, but not viewed from the standpoint of George Bush, but Southwest Asia, the traditional Levant and the Egypt, but seen from the standpoint of China, but not at all with the same optics. There's not the idea of imposing a democracy or to impose Chinese law over the Middle East, but to have a partnership, economic partnership with three roads, railways, roads, and maritime roads. I think there's a whole panel which will be developed in this part of the conference, with corridors and communications, oleoducts, pipelines, etc. So I think in this reconstruction, this is very positive for Syria. And I think the Schiller Institute, I want to compliment the Institute, which itself has a project of development over this area. There are many projects for Syria, which refer to a statement of Bashar al-Assad of 2004, well before the Arab Springs, which was the strategy of five C's by Bashar al-Assad to create infrastructure between the Mediterranean, the Indian Ocean, the Caspian Sea, and the Black Sea. I cannot go further. I promise I now finished. We have to reconstruct, absolutely. But the terrorists supported by the West have to stop destroying. It's not possible to reconstruct before these people have been kicked out and eliminated. There will be no perspectives of the lifting of sanctions. And the solution is not to receive the refugees here in Europe, but to create the conditions where they can go back and to reconstruct these people. Because the fight against ISIL is not really a priority, because even if the Daesh were not be there, there's still all the other jihadists which are as bad. And the future is up to the Syrian people. It's not up to anybody else. It's up to the Syrians to decide about the reconstruction, about what happens to Bashar al-Assad, etc. This is the position of international law. This is the position of Putin. This is the policies of Xi Jinping, because they want to reestablish international law. And the reconstruction of Syria has to be done by changing completely the perspective of a dominated South and a dominant North. And all the countries that participate to this perspective must. And I think this must change their optics in this way, and Syria will certainly be happy about this.